Can you hear it? Can you hear me running? Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and to all the freedom-loving Christians and patriots all across this great republic and around the world. I do bid you welcome this evening to another hour of the Robbie Noel Show. Robbie is actually out ill tonight. He tells me his back is bothering him, and actually, as many years as I've known Robbie, I can only well assume it probably is. And he called me with kind of a somewhat late afternoon emergency, saying, "Man, I hate to impose upon you, but can you do it again?" I says, "We'll do what we have to do." Welcome to the program. Welcome to Republic Broadcasting Network. For those of you out there listening on the shortwave on 5.05 megahertz on the dial, and also simulcast with our good friends at World Harvest Radio on 7.490 megahertz. By the way, send us out an email for those of you who may happen to be listening on WHRI, although typically I found most people listening on shortwave don't have computers, so it doesn't do a lot of good. But you can send us a message over at RBN, that's Robert Burns Network. It actually stands for Republic Broadcasting Network. RBN Gold. God, I think it is at rbnlive.com. I've lost track. Barbara, if you know something better than that, tell me. It is Wednesday, the middle of the week. We are sliding toward the weekend. It will be a busy weekend for my family and I, as it will for many. Less for the Independence Day weekend that we are facing. No, it's not called July the 4th. It's called Independence Day. It was in commemoration of our original independence, and, well, maybe it's time to consider having another one, if you catch my drift. After we come back from the early break in this program, we haven't even gotten near it yet, we're going to I do a couple of things. Certainly I'll have some degree of financial-related type commentary tonight, but a column that is currently posted on my personal website, The Federal Observer, which, by the way, the chat room is open. Come to us, join us at www.federalobserver.com. You'll find the room is open. Come on and sign in and join the conversation. This was an unscheduled night for me tonight on the air, so we don't know if there'll be much of a turnout. But if you're out there, come on and join us. It's always a good time in the chat room. We have a column posted on the Federal Observer right now. We put it up late last night, entitled, "It's the Behavior, Stupid." And I think you're going to find it an interesting commentary on a subject that bothers an awful lot of people in this country today. There's many people that are called homophobes, which by all intents and purposes means a fear of homosexuals. Well, we're not taking that path. I don't have a fear of them. I don't particularly care nor approve for their chosen lifestyle. In my personal opinion, that is what it is in most instances, a chosen lifestyle. But I'm not here to make specific comments about that issue tonight, but how the politicians are handling that issue. How they are, or more importantly, maybe even mishandling it. So do stay with us for the next hour. I'm Jeffrey Bennett, proud to be here with you. Stand by. We'll be back in a few moments.
Order the DVD of a lifetime, Into Evidence, Truth, Lies, and Unresolved Mysteries in the Murder of JFK. This landmark video is the most comprehensive presentation ever delivered on the assassination and features the leading experts in every field of scientific investigation. 32 hours of research presented on the most controversial murder of the 20th century. This compilation will make a great addition to your collection. To order this beautifully packaged 8-DVD set, visit our website, intoevidence.net/US.
If you're like the millions of Americans living day to day, trying to make ends meet, then you wouldn't want to pass up this opportunity. Employment and job security are at an all-time low, while the cost of living, supporting your family or lifestyle, and credit card debt just keep going up. So what if I told you there was a way to earn the kind of money you need and deserve? Build financial freedom. Secure a future for you and your family. And do it all right from the comfort of your own home with no money at risk. Now you...
The Bill of Rights protects every American's God-given right to keep and bear arms. Now that right is being seriously undermined as legally registered rifles are being confiscated in some parts of our country. If we're not careful, we may find ourselves with no right to own guns. And that's where Gun Owners of America comes in. Gun Owners of America is in Washington every day fighting for you to keep that right. Congressman Ron Paul has called GOA the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. You need to be part of this great grassroots group of activists who are keeping the heat on their members of Congress. Find out right now how you can join. Call 888-886-GUNS and get started receiving their fact-filled newsletters and action alerts. Call 888-886-GUNS or go to their webpage at gunowners.org and help make your voice heard in Washington. Make that call right now and call Gun Owners of America at 888-886-GUNS. Remember, it's not just about gun control, it's about control.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Every time I look into your loving eyes, I see love that money just can't buy. One look from you.
Oh, gee, I get so wrapped up in Roy Orbison, I kind of forget to come back on. You know, I was a kid in high school. One of my high school sweeties, Sally Oswald, and I used to truly enjoy Roy Orbison, and I still, all these many years later, do. Hey, we got some folks in the chat room. Time and a half for overtime? What are you guys talking about? My good friend Gringo, my American buddy, my expatriate who still has businesses in L.A. and used to have a home in Phoenix, who now resides in Mexico, has joined us. Omega's back in the room. Someone named North has entered the room tonight. I'm certain it's not Oliver, but one never knows. And someone named Jeffrey, spelled differently than mine is. Omega says, don't stop the music. You know what? In this new venue of programming, Omega, I don't control the music. It's controlled in Texas. I'm in Arizona. Welcome to the world of electronics. It's absolutely marvelous. For those of you who may have joined us late, Robbie is out under the weather tonight. And no, it has nothing to do with bending the elbow at the lemonade stand. He truly has some back problems, which Robbie's been plagued with for many, many years, as some longtime listeners are aware of. And hopefully he'll be back into the foray tomorrow, because I'm scheduled to be back here tomorrow, so... Anyway, before the break, I share with you, we have a column that's currently posted on the Federal Observer that I found quite an interesting column, and I think a lot of our listeners at WHRI will understand the direction of this particular commentary. For those of you who are not familiar, maybe with some of the programming I do, I don't have a lot of guests on. I'm not afraid of having guests, but there are so many of the same guests that are recycled over and over and over, program after program after program, that after a while, it's like each program becomes a clone of itself. And I'm not just talking about this network, but many of the same guests share across networks, and it becomes difficult to deal with. I tend to seek out and search for potential guests that have not really been heard. Cat World, my good friend, glad to have you here. Say hi to Fern. And so you'll hear that I do a tremendous amount of monologues. Why? Because, number one, it's only a one-hour program. And an hour doesn't really leave a lot of time to emphasize whatever commentary or direction we may happen to take the program. And so when I come across a piece like this, written by a gentleman named J. Matt Barber, I don't have in front of me the original publication he published it on, but we have chosen to republish it on the Federal Observer. It is entitled, It's the Behavior Stupid. Now, you'll understand in just a moment why it is called that. Whether you liked the man or not, there was a gentleman out there in the Clinton administration that is commonly referred to as Bayou Brat, James Carville, notable Democratic Party strategist and Bill Clinton advisor. And he was appropriately credited for his pivotal role in helping to put the former adulterer-in-chief in the Oval Office back in 1992. Carville boiled down the theme of the Clinton candidacy to four simple words. He says, it's the economy, stupid. Well, by focusing like a laser beam on the hot-button issue of the day, that's the economy, Carville helped Clinton to co-opt that issue and, in fact, to make it his own. Now, the economy is always a major area of concern for most Americans from a fiscal standpoint. However, on the field of battle in today's culture war, one of the most significant and contentious issues, particularly to people of faith, is the rapid destruction of traditional family values, liberty of conscience, and freedom of speech at the hands of leftists and secularists who condone, promote, and or participate in dangerous, unhealthy, and traditionally shameful sexual behaviors. Now, take it from someone who knows. For those who value the sanctity of marriage, and ladies and gentlemen, I have been married for 36 years. Yes, to the same woman. There's been times we've been ready to kill each other, but is there no relationship that has not gone through that situation? But it is the trials, the tribulations, the faith, and the hard work that keeps families together. And it still is not easy. But for those of you who value the sanctity of marriage and respect the biblical model of human sexuality, in other words, one man and one woman within the bounds of holy matrimony, it is not a very safe time to publicly express those values nor beliefs. Unfortunately, the situation, my friends, only promises to get worse as systematic religious discrimination, ironically wheeled under the guise of a morally relative and encompassing notion of tolerance, continues to fix its stranglehold on detractors of both the homosexual lifestyle and the so-called gay marriage. Now, it's becoming more and more commonplace. People of faith and anyone else who dare to speak out against sexual immorality or to defend the time-honored definitions of marriage and family are no longer just ostracized, but are in fact frequently silenced through fear and intimidation, fired from our jobs, and in some cases have even been jailed or beaten or killed. Now, the latest example of such religious discrimination in today's values depleted and amoral pop culture includes one Robert J. Smith, who, by all accounts, was a well-respected and highly productive member of the Washington, D.C. Metro Board. Now, Maryland Governor Robert Elrich, a Republic rat, recently caved into pressure by radical gay activists and fired Smith for engaging in public what they called hate speech. Now, what did Smith say? In an interview on local cable television program, while discussing so-called homosexual marriage, Smith replied to the speaker who asserted that homosexuals did not want the government interfering in their sex life. Well, Smith countered by summing up his own Roman Catholic beliefs on the subject when he said, that's fine, but that doesn't mean that government should proffer a special place of entitlement within the laws of the United States for persons of sexual deviancy. Whoa, 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 stop the presses, baby. Call in the hate cops. I mean, you mean Smith had the gall to refer to homosexual behavior as deviant? We should all demand and be shackled and dragged off to a progressive re-education camp and flogged with a rolled-up copy of The Advocate until he involuntarily blurts out, Bible bad, homo good. Now let us consider Smith's words for a moment. Barbara, if you could gloss over the 20-minute break, I would appreciate it. I don't really want to break up this thought train on this comment. Let's consider Smith's words for a moment and this so-called hateful and intolerant meaning behind those words. Deviancy is defined as, quote, differing from a norm or from the accepted standard of society, end quote. Have we actually in this country reached the point where sodomy is considered the norm and the accepted standard of society? Well, according to Governor Elrich and his homosexual activist cohorts, not only have we reached that point, but anyone who says otherwise is to be severely and summarily punished. Now, you want to talk about intolerance? What about tolerance for differing religious viewpoints? Do you want to talk about hate? The only hate we see here is the hateful anti-Catholic or anti-Christian actions of Elrich and his gay activist allies. It's of little consolation that Elrich's actions in firing Smith are both clearly unconstitutional and grossly un-American. But in today's culture of liberal judicial activism, if Smith challenges his firing, the courts may very well let this act of blatant religious discrimination stand. But don't you hope that we're wrong? You see, it is a travesty to be sure, but kudos to Smith for taking such a courageous and principled stand and for verbalizing his beliefs and the beliefs of millions of other Americans in such a pointed and unequivocal fashion. If there's anything positive to be gained from Smith's ordeal, it would be this, my friends. In his public comments about homosexual marriage, Smith not only hit the nail on the head, he stumbled onto the much larger issue. You see, homosexuality is not a neutral status or a state of being as typified by one's membership in a suspect minority class, such as maybe being black or female or whatever. You see, it's about sexual deviancy. It's about choosing to define one's identity based upon with whom and how one elects to achieve sexual gratification. In other words, Mr. Carville, it's the behavior, stupid. Many pro-family organizations, conservative politicians, true conservative politicians, and there are few of them left, and clergymen as well, all seems to have surrendered. They've given up on addressing the negative, the moral, and the physical and emotional implications of homosexual behavior and have instead chosen to hunker down and play defense, to simply try to defend traditional marriage. We've lost on the behavior issue. And so let's circle the wagons in defense of marriage. That seems to be the laissez-faire attitude that prevails. But you see, just because a large portion of society has chosen to disregard the negative aspects of the homosexual lifestyle does not mean that those negative lifestyle aspects should not continue to be challenged. Now, in the tradition of Mr. Carville, the mouth from the South, perhaps it's time that proponents of traditional marriage and sexual morality narrow the focus just a wee bit. You see, perhaps it's time to address once again the often mind-boggling moral and health-related pitfalls associated with that chosen lifestyle. That's nothing personal. There's no attack here on any individual person because of who that person is, but rather it is simply an honest and legitimate debate as to whether we should all be forced to accept and honor what that person chooses to do, whether we should have to view that behavior as good or moral or praiseworthy, despite thousands of years of Christian tradition and good old common sense that decidedly says that that chosen lifestyle is not acceptable. My friends, it's time to wake up and call a spade a spade. Let us call it what it is, dangerous behavior. Dangerous behavior. Let's call sin, sin. And as they say, the best defense is a good offense, and it's time to go on the offense no matter how offensive it might be to those who don't want to hear it. It is unfortunate that there hasn't been more of an effort to debunk the hate and intolerance rhetoric and hyperbole bandied about by the left as they seek to quell all criticism of that type of behavior. It's time for blacks and other genuine minorities to take back the language of true civil rights. Someone's trying to call. They're obviously not listening on the radio. It is time for blacks and other genuine minorities to take back the language of true civil rights, which has been hijacked by radical homosexual activists in an effort to further the fraudulent concept that any and all sexual behavior must be fully accepted without question, or those who refuse to accept that behavior have somehow committed a hate crime against those who choose to engage in that behavior. It is time to focus once again on behavior as we seek to protect the sanctity of marriage and put to rest this ridiculous, oxymoronic, and androgynous counterfeit referred to as same-sex marriage. Hang on a second. My apologies for that interruption. I have a grandchildren here, and one of them seems to be having an interesting time going on out there. People of faith, to continue, should begin to beat the drum to make it clear that to speak out against homosexual behavior is neither to hate nor to be intolerant of the people who engage in that behavior. In fact, the Christian model is to love those persons, but to hate the sinful behavior in which they engage. It demands that we are intolerant of expressly sinful behavior. Again, it's nothing personal. It's the biblical model, and the Bible is an equal opportunity discriminator. The same goes for persons who engage in other sexual sin, such as pedophilia, adultery, polygamy, or fornication. I wonder, why don't we see roving bands of angry, militant fornicators and adulterers marching in the streets demanding that we stop hating them and tolerate their sexual behaviors without question? Well, maybe it's just probably a matter of time. Why have we yet to hear about pedophilia pride or polygamy pride or adulterer pride in our public schools and corporate diversity training? I guess it's just a matter of time there as well. And finally, why have there been no pride parades for people who define their identity based upon a sexual penchant for pygmies in pink bunny suits with jumper cables and a trapeze? And maybe it's just a matter of time there. But I do suggest to you, my friends, it is an uphill battle. The left has done a masterful job of selling the lie, packaging the propaganda neatly gift-wrapped with colorful words like hate and intolerance and discrimination and closed-mindedness. And to the average person who formulates opinions based on crafty 30-second sound bites, it is an easy lie to buy. Who wants to hate? I don't. I don't, frankly, have time to hate. Who wants to be intolerant? Not I. But who wants to be closed-minded? Once again, not I. I believe I have a very open mind, but there's just so far that we can go. Maybe it's time to push back a little, my friends, and stop allowing the left to paint those who speak out against the homosexual lifestyle as hateful and intolerant bigots with their broad rainbow brush of enlightenment, as Governor Elrich did to Robert Smith. The irony is palpable. In his post-firing public statement, Governor Elrich, displaying a patent intolerance for Smith's mainstream religious beliefs, actually had the audacity to say that Smith's comments were highly inappropriate, insensitive, and unacceptable. They are in direct conflict to my administration's commitment to tolerance, he concluded. And I will conclude this segment by saying this to you. It is equally ironic that while defending this form of behavior, proponents of that homosexual behavior, like Governor Elrich, will often shake their angry little fingers at people of faith and repeat Christ's words when he said, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone." But you know, curiously, they always seem to conveniently overlook the words that Christ spoke in nearly the same breath to the prospective target of that first stone, that being, now go and sin no more. And so I guess the question becomes, who are the sinners? It is interesting, the chat room has certainly moved in the direction of discussing this issue. Do I have a fear of homos, therefore am I a homophobe? No, I am not a fear of them. I don't approve of their lifestyle, and it is a choice. I do not care what they say. And I find it very problematic that those who tend to accuse us tend to be violating their own accusations. We are, and you know what's interesting? I go back to the very opening section of this column we've just shared with you. Once again, if you wish to read it, by J. Matt Barber. It's on the front page of the Federal Observer, www.federalobserver.com. And one of the interesting comments is that we don't care to have government attempting to make decisions regarding each and every little item that comes up. Why should, you know, we basically, the white people are being discriminated against. The blacks are certainly being discriminated in this country today because of the allowance of the invasion by our little brothers from south of the border who are being basically taking the jobs that many of the blacks had. It serves no purpose. Those who scream the loudest are also usually the greatest violators of the things they're screaming about, and that's what I suspect that Governor Elrich is doing. I have a problem with this. You know, once again, this particular diatribe is less about the issue of homosexuality than it is about the way politicians use the issue, as they do many others, to make their own personal statement or to politicize, not much differently than the politicizing of the issue regarding the burning of the flag. That one's not over yet. But you know what? I've been watching that particular one for 10 years. 10 years I've been watching that whole flag amendment business about the burning and the not burning and the desecration. There's more to it than desecration. Number one, we're talking about getting involved with First Amendment-related issues. That is a big concern to me. Number two, as a former Cub Scout and Boy Scout leader, at least twice, sometimes as many as six times a year, it was very common for me to teach my young boys and young men the proper etiquette in retiring a worn, tired, tattered old flag. And for those of you who've been on this earth for a few years, you know of what I speak. You know there's a proper way to do it. And there are numerous ceremonies that I would take my boys through with the burning of the flag. And normally telling stories while I was doing it and talking about the original 13 states or talking about Lexington and Concord and talking about the sacrifices that were made so darn many years ago to give us this land that some are now hell-bent to take away from us. Do stay with us for the second half an hour. Thanks so much for being here with us. I'm Jeff Bennett. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Axiom, The Second American Civil War, a new novel by T. Edward Allen. Through corruption, greed, and incompetence, the neocons have brought the world to the brink of World War III. John Carter and his family are caught in the middle of a terrifying plunge into chaos. When the world economy collapses, America is brought down with it. The focal point is the ideological conflict between progressives and conservatives. And when civil war breaks out, Americans find that every axiom they took for granted has been overturned. returned. Dangerously political and thought-provoking, T. Edward Allen takes readers on a wild ride and a glimpse into America's future with madmen at the helm.
Buy Axiom at www.axiom-thenovel.com. That's axiom-thenovel.com or find it at amazon.com. Get in on the buzz. Purchase your copy. Axiom, The Second American Civil War by T. Edward Allen.
Over 100 million Americans have dangerously high cholesterol. Are you one of them? North American Urban Spice has developed Cholestamine, an all-natural food-based supplement proven to give your body the nutritional support it needs to lower cholesterol and improve circulation naturally without the side effects of harmful prescription drugs. Call today, 800-243-5242, 800-243-5242 for Cholestamine.
Introducing the world's best air purifier, the Aeronizer. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does. It's so powerful it kills molds and mildews as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on the surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. Call 877-605-9200 or visit the website at www.aeronair.us.
Would you like to have an income regardless of the economic situation, which few trade people have considered? The art of knife sharpening is a skill that will never disappear and will always be in demand. Whether you have a place of business and just want to add to your income, or would like to travel servicing restaurants, barbershops, or a variety of businesses in need of sharpening tools, you're always guaranteed an income with repetitive business. Learn how to become a successful grindsman. It's easy to learn with our portable Grambo sharpening system. Travel anywhere you desire. Purchase the training manual for only $30, and it'll be applied toward your purchase of the Grambo sharpening system. America has become a service-oriented rather than a manufacturing or even high-tech economy. Take advantage of the situation and become a professional grindsman. It's easy to learn. Start on a shoestring with the overwhelming amount of business out there. Now is the best time to start. Call today for more information. You can enjoy the good life. Call now, 512-297-3152. That's 512-297-3152.
Well, Granddaddy was a hillbilly scholar, blue collar of a man. He came from the school where you didn't eat nothing if you couldn't make it with your own two hands. He was backwoods, backwards, used words like no sir, yes ma'am, by God be darned. Hell yeah, I'm American.
Hey, you know, the words to this song are kind of interesting. I'm listening to them, backwoods, etc. There's two different forms of being backwoods. There's real Americans that choose to live in the backwoods. And then there's leaders that act like they're from the backwoods, or the Hollywood's perception of what the backwoods is like. Don't even get me started there. Let's go down some other historical venues, totally unrelated to the first half of the program. Obviously, as you well know, this program is sponsored in part by the Republic Trading Group, which Robbie and Noel and I represent on a daily basis. It was a very busy night last night. You folks really grabbed on to the offer we made with the British sovereigns. No, we're not redoing it again tonight because we sold out of it, and we'll probably take a look at something again next week. But you know what? Don't ever let that hold you off. If you're sitting there thinking about moving into gold and silver, you've got some questions, think carefully about last night's program. As a matter of fact, if you did not listen to last night's program, I strongly urge you to go back into the archives, another Robbie Noel show. Go to rbnlive.com, click on the link over on the left that says Show Archives. When it opens up, scroll down until you see it says The Robbie Noel Show. Click on 2006, pick on last night's program. What was the date yesterday? June the 27th in the year of our Lord, 2006. If you did not hear that program, I strongly urge you do. Not because I was doing it, but it was the subject matter that needs to be heard. Frederick the Great was once asked why it was that he chose his officer corps only from the Junkers of Prussia. rather than other groups? Why not a clever baker's son from Dresden? What's wrong with a solid farmer from Pomerania? Nein, he replied, explaining his preference for the Junkers. Because they will not lie, und sie cannot be bought. Well, great empires depend on a reliable professional class of military officers, administrators, and businessmen. Britain had them when it ruled the waves. They came out of the public, of course we would call them private school, of Tom Brown's school days. And they were packed off into Her Majesty's civil service. Many were incompetent, but few were dishonest. America never really had a specific class of civil servants. The place was always too big and too mobile. As good a military man might spring from the coal mines of West Virginia as from the citadels of the East Coast elites. And so might a good business arise from the cattle ranches of Texas as from the counting houses of San Francisco. The history of World War II, for example. Now, that's an interesting tale of how they came together and got the job done. They, too, were often hopelessly naive and incompetent compared, say, to the more experienced Germans. But very few stole, very few lied, very few shirked, ducked, or jived. But now, my friends, it's a half a century later. They've all got the scent of the dollar floating in their nostrils. The fumes of it seem to intoxicate them. And they'll say anything to catch the smell of the green. A heavy whiff. And they're ready for an offer. There are so many dollars around that the odor of money is overpowering. And thus we hear the stories of outrageous executive compensation in America. They are no junkers. Instead, they pack compensation committees with cronies and crooks who throw them juicy contracts. And they juggle quarterly earnings and pull out bigger bonuses from the hat. And they twist the numbers so much that you'd think that they worked for the U.S. Labor Department, where in the throes of what was once quaintly called public service, we find other figure benders at work, continuing to bamboozle the public. And even out in the periphery of empire, where U.S. soldiers risked their lives, the incorruptible junkers have died out. And according to the press reports, the lure of money is irresistible even to them, and billions of dollars are being squandered. And sweetheart contracts with Bush supporters, bids that are rigged or jigged, and products never delivered, and jobs never completed or even begun. It's as if the money grubbers realize that the war were not real and use it only another chance to get something for nothing. And yet back in the homeland, the common man has picked up the scent as well. He has sniffed his way to wealth without work in the form of housing price increases. He does not have to build a better mousetrap. He no longer needs to work harder or save more. Honesty does not seem to help him. Can he be bought? Are you kidding? You see, it's just a question of price. As long as house prices keep rising 10% a year, anyone can have his vote, and so house prices rise. And he takes the money and binds himself like a slave to a master, like a knave to a lord, to mortgage payments, Social Security, and federal handouts. He is no sturdy, independent junker of old. He cannot afford to be. Instead, you see, he too has become a Fed watcher, for he knows that another couple of rate rises will wipe him out. But every bad thing finally comes to an end. That this too will pass, we do not doubt. How it will pass and what will pass with it, we wait to find out. And so, I ask the question, has it been 4 years ago already? Are we really that old? You know, it seemed so simple back then. We watched the bubble in Japan pop at the beginning of the 1990s. And we watched it happen in Argentina in the early 90s. And we watched it happen again just a few years ago. We watched the U.S. stock market, led by techs, repeat the same pattern that's taken place since time immemorial. Over and over and over again. Every excess, absurdity, and extravagance that had made fools of the Japanese made cretins in America. But 10 years later, And then come the year 2000, we thought we knew what would happen next. In fact, we were so sure of it, a book was written arguing that the United States would follow Japan's example with a long, slow slump that would take stock prices down. At that time, nearly 80% was the estimate, and make consumer prices fall and push the economy into recession. And everything that should happen, you understand, eventually does. But fortunes are lost betting when and how. The roll of the dice at the crap table, the pulling of the arm on the bandit, and the spin of the wheel at roulette. The market can fail to do what it is supposed to do longer than you can stay solvent. Now, in the event tech stocks did fall 80%, the Dow was going down as well, and the U.S. economy did go into recession. But then, peculiar and irregular commandos struck the World Trade Center towers in New York, or some commandos. Some say it was with commercial jets, and the American public with panic. George W. Bush, our current commander-in-chief, at least as of this date, June the 28th, 2006, and, of course, his then-cohort, the Wizard of Oz, Mr. Greenspan, joined forces to unplug the biggest gush of liquidity the world has ever seen. Taxes were cut. Spending was increased, and the Fed cut the price of money to below the prevailing rate of consumer price inflation, and the resulting tide of cash and credit swirled all about us. But did the Feds actually sidestep the correction that the country needed, or did they just post-date it and make it worse? You see, inflation is now the big worry. That's what we read in the papers. Do you believe it? Do you not believe it? Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under one William Jefferson Clinton, seconds us. He says deflation, not inflation, is what Bernanke should be worried about. Reich goes on to say, each generation, in its determination to avoid the nightmare it does remember, runs the danger of overreacting and thereby bringing on the opposite trauma. A generation ago, economic policymakers paid too little attention to inflationary forces then building in the American economy. Do you know how long a generation ago was? We're talking the late 70s, early 80s. A generation is 25 years, my friends. And so a generation ago, economic policymakers paid so little attention to inflationary forces that were building up in the American economy that it eventually jumped up to bite us in the buttocks. And eventually one Paul Volcker had to break the back of inflation by raising interest rates sky high. Do you remember? 20, 22%? Well, that put the economy into a severe recession, and now Bernanke and company are paying too little attention to deflationary forces building in America and the global economy. Bernanke fears that today's economy resembles the one that began to overheat in the 1970s, but we would suggest he is wrong. Labor unions today do not have nearly the power they did back then to get wage increases. Big companies don't have nearly the power they did then to raise prices. Global wage competition is keeping a lid on American wages, for those who are lucky enough to be working, just as global price competition is pushing down on American prices. And meanwhile, fancy computer software is allowing rivals all over the map to erode almost anyone's market share. So who's going to raise prices in this environment? And what's more, there's no reason to raise prices. This is Reich continuing on. Productivity has been soaring over the last 5 years, while the median wage has been stuck in the mud. Wages, remember, constitute about 70% of the cost of doing business. So how can price pressures be building? Bernanke and company worry the U.S. labor market is heating up. They're wrong here as well. Despite what look like rosy employment numbers, a smaller portion of American labor force is employed today than it was in the year 2000. Millions of people do not show up on the unemployment rolls because they're too discouraged even to look for work. It's not as simple as that. They don't show up on the unemployment rolls because they're no longer eligible. They've now fallen into the welfare category, and those numbers are not counted in unemployment. The price increases, he continues, that we are now witnessing are not due to excess demand over limited productive capacity, which causes inflation. They come mainly from soaring prices for energy and raw materials. These commodities are being bid upward because of China's rapid growth. But take a closer look and you see something else going on. Much of the increase in commodity prices is being driven by speculators who expect prices to continue to rise. In other words, part of what we are seeing are speculative bubbles. And such bubbles can burst at any time. The fact is, the global market is glutted with productive capacity, and that's not chiefly because of the huge gains in American productivity. If you really want to see a glut, look to China. If anything, there's too much capacity relative to demand. This is a recipe for deflation. Prices can begin to drop because buyers hold off, expecting further price decreases. It happened in Japan in the early 90s. It's already beginning to happen in certain housing markets in the United States that had been red hot but a year ago and are now cooling so fast that home prices are dropping like a rock. Deflation is often accompanied by stagnant or falling wages, which make it harder for consumers to afford to buy. Look what's happening to American wages. The Fed and other central bankers around the world are raising interest rates because they're fighting the last war. But they already won that war. You see, inflation is no longer our biggest threat, Reich believes. They ought to be worried about the war before the last one and the specter of deflation. They're in danger of losing that war even before they know they're in it. End of Reich's comments. Maybe we weren't wrong. Maybe we're just early. Pushing up interest rates to fight inflation and load the gun, the Bernanke Fed could help trigger the Japan-style slump that many of us have seen coming 5 years ago. We had a listener who offered a look into the not-so-distant future when he said, a bit of clarity seems to be boiling out of the soup. The Fed bares its chest to fight inflation. I mean, come on, hasn't anyone noticed inflation's already here? How can they be hiding it in reports? Because anyone who buys anything must certainly see huge inflation in everything they purchase. They raise rates 2 to 3 times more, which is almost going to stall the economy. U.S. debt, and thus U.S. dollar, becomes much in demand as emerging markets looking for some rock of Gibraltar flock to the U.S. dollar and the relatively high rates, and it is not going to happen. I don't see it happening. Do you get it? Because you see, my friends, I just lost my place. You ever do that? Because you see, now we have an economy that's grinding sideways. The Fed prints a few trillion dollars to ostensibly pay debt, and then everyone in the world is left holding a bunch of dollar-denominated instruments that are now suddenly worth 20 to 30% less due to dilution. Of course, then they go on another round of interest rate drops to spur the economy. They drop the demand for T-bills, increase the demand for stocks, but of course the E part of P&E, profits and earning, has already been challenged. So now what? We got excess liquidity going into art? I got a hot painting I'll sell you. Nearly simultaneously, ARMs, adjustable rate mortgages, are up. People are beginning to struggle already, and they're defaulting on loans, and they're being just tight on money. But now the housing begins being sold by the banks and in fire sales to avoid their own bankruptcy. Those who do not default will be upside down in their mortgage, and even the remaining value of the too big house, too quickly depreciating and too expensive to maintain, will have lost 20 to 30% of its value in relation to the dollar. Is this going over your head? Maybe it is. Come on, we've talked about this since George Bush took office in the year, what, 2001? And it's not all his fault. Don't kid yourself. The problems began long ago. The dollar's lost somewhere between 40 and 50% of its value and purchasing power just in that five-year time period. And so, you see, all of this might look like a great plan to me. And I think it might be able to work. We'll keep blowing the smoke, flashing the mirrors, because a lot of this stuff gets the rest of the world to share in some of our costs as world policemen. Also cost shares our excesses of living beyond our means, and then puts the middle and lower class into 30 years of indentured servitude as they're locked in an upside-down house. And the only trouble is turning all my U.S. dollar-denominated stuff into other stuff, and very quickly, and we'll be back after these few announcements for final words.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN network.
Would you like to have an income regardless of the economic situation, which few trade people have considered? The art of knife sharpening is a skill that will never disappear and will always be in demand. Whether you have a place of business and just want to add to your income, or would like to travel servicing restaurants, barbershops, or a variety of businesses in need of sharpening tools, you're always guaranteed an income with repetitive business. Learn how to become a successful grindsman. It's easy to learn with our portable Grambo sharpening system. Travel anywhere you desire. Purchase the training manual for only $30, and it'll be applied toward your purchase of the Grambo sharpening system. America has become a service-oriented rather than a manufacturing or even high-tech economy. Take advantage of the situation and become a professional grindsman. It's easy to learn. Start on a shoestring with the overwhelming amount of business out there. Now is the best time to start. Call today for more information. You can enjoy the good life. Call now, 512-297-3152. That's 512-297-3152.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
Welcome back to the final few moments. I sometimes get caught up in the music. It's not the normal kind of music that I would be involved with, but that's okay. It's interesting stuff. I'm always open. I'm a music lover, have been most of my life. You want to get into jazz, you want to get into country, patriotic stuff, opera, I pretty much cover the gamut. We reached the final few moments of this Wednesday evening program. If some of the economic commentary we made tonight, it makes any sense to you, and you wish to delve into it a little bit further, maybe some of it hits home. We didn't really do it as kind of a promotionary thing for converting a portion of your assets into hard and tangible assets. It was just continued proof that there's a lot of people out there that are more and more beginning to realize that this government, this administration, not just this administration, as I mentioned earlier, it goes back much further than that, has put this nation in a position of economic jeopardy. It's almost suicidal. In fact, historically, we can show that it is suicidal. We are making the same mistake that every other nation of our type throughout history has eventually gone down. No one learns from the lessons of the past. Everyone thinks that by putting a Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, or a man behind the curtain, to act like the Wizard of Oz, that we can maybe make a difference this time. No, we won't let it happen. This is, after all, the, by gosh, United States of America, the land of the home and the free and the brave and the yada, 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 and the broke. We cannot continue to send our jobs overseas. We cannot continue to employ our men and women to do nothing but flip burgers and package tacos at every fast food restaurant in the country, ladies and gentlemen. Something is horribly, horribly wrong. I have two children in their 20s. This has not been an easy life for them. We don't spoil our children, and I'm sure many of you out there do not. But we're finding more and more, and this may be the goodness to come out of it. The economic hell that I believe is going to be facing this nation in the not-too-distant future is going to force some goodness to come out of this country. I believe it's going to bring people back to their knees, not just asking for something, but to get down on their knees and offer something, offer themselves. And secondly, and not as important, but I believe all of this is going to bring families back together to stand shoulder to shoulder for the goodness of the family. And that's when morality will come back to play in this country. Hey, the music says it's time for me to get on out of here. I will see you tomorrow night, as you do on Thursday nights. But until that time, for Robbie Noel and myself, without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.